We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Coast to Coast on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I'm Creedy Mustafa alongside Calvin Wetzel. And the college season is over for the year 2024. Cal, you just came back from Cleveland for Final Four and Championship weekend. We have a lot to get into. We're going to get into all of that. And then at the end of the pod, we're going to look forward to the WNBA draft, which is happening next week. Cal, you ready?
I am. I got back last night, went right to bed, got a good night's sleep, and now I have all my podcast energy ready to go. I'm ready to get into it.
Well, first, like, how was the weekend? Like, did you enjoy it? What was it like? Like, what was the energy?
So much fun. Just as always with the Final Four or WNBA All-Star, any of these type of big events, just seeing everyone, the whole women's basketball community kind of in one place, and these people that you only see a few times a year or whatever, just like connecting is always the favorite part for me. And then obviously the games are awesome too. That's why I'm there. But I'm also there just to like get to know people and hang out. And there was so much of that. So I had a really good time, and I already am counting down the days, like 364 days till Tampa or whatever it is. I can't wait, but
we got to book the hotel now. It was fantastic.
Yep. As soon as we get off, I'm going to have to go do it.
How was Cleveland, though? Because as somebody who has been to Cleveland many times now at my point in my life, which is like, I was so salty not being able to go for Final Four because of school. Do you have to debunk this idea that Cleveland is not a great place? Because I feel like we should.
Yeah, I enjoyed Cleveland. I'm not sure what Joakim Noah was talking about back in the day, because I thought it was fun. And I have, to be fair, a pretty low bar. I have fun doing anything with anybody, so whatever. But there are some cool little bars and places that we got to go hang out. And it was like a pretty walkable area where we were. The hotel wasn't too far from the arena. So that's always what I enjoy, just having everything kind of right there. And I feel like we had a good little area with all of that. So I had a good time in Cleveland.
That's good. You guys did miss the good weather, though, because I feel like the good weather started this week after a last
week had one
winter.
Day. I feel like it maybe Saturday, I want to say, maybe Sunday, whatever day. There was one day with good weather. Yeah, when we first got there, not the best, but it is what it is. It wasn't too bad. But there was one day that it was really nice out. I just wanted to be outside all day.
Good. So all in all, good vibes. We love to hear that. The good vibes continued for South Carolina. They remained undefeated. They became national champions again for the first time since 2022. They beat Iowa. There's so many stuff to like even touch on in this championship game. But first, do you have like general thoughts on the Final Four matchups before we kind of dive into the championship?
Yeah, NC State played a fantastic 20 minutes of basketball, obviously. And to start with them, you know, I think Isaiah James went out the way she'd been playing the whole tournament. Just terrific. And then on the other side, that third quarter that South Carolina put together in that game against NC State, and especially to do it the way they did against NC State's zone and just knocking down threes all over the place, was, I feel like, such a cool kind of like full circle from South Carolina's Final Four a year ago, to see South Carolina win the game in that fashion specifically. And then on the other side, Iowa UConn delivered as we thought it would, lived up to the hype, and Nika Mule played just an outstanding game on both sides, especially defensively, like setting the tone for what Raven Johnson did. I think two of the best defensive and we'll talk about Raven, but two of the best defensive performances against Caitlin Clark that we've seen all year, and UConn came up just short, but I think Nika Mule can hold her head high for what she did in that game, because it was incredible, and I'll be interested to see. I know we'll get into this too, if she raised her draft stock a little bit during that 40 minutes, because she was impressive and a lot of people were watching.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that later too, especially because some of these athletes who have declared for the draft have also signed with new like representation and sports agencies. So I'm very interested to see, you know, after their tournament performances. But what are your thoughts? And I might put you on a little bit on the spot here about that final call between UConn and Iowa, that moving screen on Aaliyah Edwards, because, wow, I just choked there. But she went on Instagram and she posted something about like a caption about like, there's hate, but the love is louder. So I'm just wondering, like, how much of that burden did she carry on herself?
Yeah, well, in terms of the call itself, I mean, I think I fall kind of in between where a lot of people are, that there's so many extreme polarizing opinions on it. And to me, like, yeah, probably technically she was moving, whatever. I'm not a big fan of like the rules change in the last 10 seconds because of the situation of the game. Like, you don't call this because it's a good game, even if you would call it otherwise. But I do think that if there's been certain contact that you've been letting go for 39 and a half minutes, then you probably should still let it go, because that's about consistency. And I mean, you can argue whether it was more contact than what they had been letting go or not. I don't know. It's tough. I'm not a ref, and I don't ever want to be. So I obviously, just from a neutral fan perspective, you would have loved to see the game end with a Paige Bueckers three, and maybe it goes in and maybe it doesn't. Either way, would have loved to find out.
Yeah.
In terms of Aaliyah Edwards and how she handled it, and Paige Bueckers too, I tweeted this, but I was so unbelievably impressed with just their composure in the press conference afterwards, and how they fielded some questions that, frankly, felt really like they were trying to bait them into saying something bad, and it didn't work, because those two, and you know, Nika was up there too. And she did a great job. I don't think she got asked about the refs quite as much, but those two specifically, Paige and Aaliyah, continually got asked about the refs. And I guess someone's got to ask the question, I guess. Someone's got to ask about the foul. I don't know why four people had to ask about it. I don't know why we had to keep going in on it. But every time, they kept saying the right thing, and they kept holding their head high. You saw, you know, Paige talking about the fact that it's not one play that decides the game, that she could have done different things better, just like ultimate professionalism from both of them in that press conference in a moment that, you know, Aaliyah's career just ended, Paige's season just ended, had to be so emotionally difficult, and I would not have handled it well. I wouldn't have, but both of them did, and I think they both deserve a lot of flowers for that.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with you. I think like some people were angry too, because they were saying like even if it was a moving screen, it still didn't really affect anybody from getting to Paige for that final shot, and that it didn't really have that much like of an effect. And yeah, like you're right. I think the main issue is consistency with the calls, and to have a call like that happen at a very crucial point in the game, I think is just amplified even more just how frustrating that was. But overall, a really good Final Four weekend. Let's get to the championship game. And I wanted to start, before we get into the game itself, I want to start with the viewership. I'm going to pull up this graphic from ESPN PR, which says that it was 18.7 million viewers, peaked at 24 million. Viewership is up 89% from last year and 285% from the year before. Most, and this is the part that got me, most watched basketball game, men's or women's, college or pro, since 2019. That's 5 years. That's five whole years. That is the most watched basketball game on ESPN in 5 years. Just,
I think anywhere.
We need to, yeah, like anywhere. Like, we need to just sit and think about what those numbers mean. Like, that is a phenomenal accomplishment. And I was talking to my parents about it because I was all, like, hyped up and, like, really proud. And they were like, oh, it's because, like, they got more coverage. And I was like, yeah, see what happens when the athletes get the coverage that they deserve? Like, this is why they say, if you build it, they will come. The audience is there. People are getting into it. And we've been talking about this shift for the last, like, year, couple years. And this feels like the concrete proof that we can finally kill the statement of who watches women's sports, because the answer is everyone. Cal, thoughts?
100%. Everyone. Like, people who don't even watch sports in general were watching this game. People who I like in my life, and I feel like I've said this on other podcasts for the last couple rounds too, were, who I thought like had never even heard of basketball, men's or women's, period. Just like straight up didn't follow sports, texting me about this game and about all of these games in the Final Four as well. It's here. And yeah. I saw that the pregame show was 2.9 million, the pregame show. And that a few years ago, there was one women's college basketball game all season that averaged or that broke 2.9 million for the game. And now we had a pregame show that outdid basically every game from a few years ago. And then the actual game itself peaked at 24 million. There are football games that don't get 24 million. The context that, I forget if it was on that graphic or another one, the only sporting events that have beat this in the last few years
are
some football games
and the Olympics.
And
that's it.
I think maybe the World Cup, or maybe not even the World Cup. I feel like I saw that somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe
the graphic says football and the Olympics. Yeah, it says, excluding football and Olympics, this is the most watched sporting event since 2019.
Yeah, there you go. It's beating everything. Absolutely everything. It's amazing. And now I just hope we can translate that, which we will at the end of this podcast, to WNBA viewership. Because
for sure,
that's coming up soon. The draft is coming up this coming week. And then we have games starting in a month. So it's a perfect time. WNBA really needs to take advantage of this momentum because the train is rolling right now.
For sure. And like, even WNBA viewership, like, we've seen it grow up exponentially as well over the last several years. And I feel like this is such like a moment, to just like, not a moment, but like a movement that you can just continue on. I had friends texting me, like, to speak to your point about like people who don't watch sports or like don't watch specifically basketball. Like, one of my friends who, she's like a football fan, doesn't really watch basketball, she's texting me like, South Carolina was undefeated. And she saw like the graphic of like South Carolina being like 109-3 in the last like three seasons. She was like, excuse me? Like, she was texting me. She was absolutely flabbergasted. And I'm getting like also TikToks all over my For You page about people who have tuned into March Madness on the women's side for the first time. And they're like all these like realizations. There's this one girl that was like, you're telling me they just played the championship game this week. The WNBA draft is in a week. And then the WNBA season is in a month after that. And they're just like, they can't contemplate what's going on. It's like all these new fans that are just like now really want to follow women's basketball. And I think that's super cool. Kind of like a surreal moment for sure. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about the champions, South Carolina. Like I said, undefeated season. They went 38-0. Cal, can you put into words just how impressive this run was for this team this year?
Yeah, so I brought this up in our podcast in Cleveland after the game. And if anyone's listening, I have a challenge for you because I don't know enough history about every sport ever. And so I want someone to find me, if it exists, someone in a major sport. So I'm not talking about like seventh grade field hockey, like college, pro, basketball, football, baseball, hockey, whatever. Like,
not you giving out homework.
Yeah, homework. That exactly what this is. Find me a team that lost every starter, any sports team, team sports, and went undefeated the next year. Any level, whatever sport, pro, college, I want to know, because maybe it happened. I don't know, but I can't think of a time when it happened. We could talk about some times that were close, 2017 UConn, but has it ever actually happened? I don't know. And to me, what Dawn Staley did, losing every starter and going undefeated, is one of the best coaching jobs that anyone has ever done in any sport in any season. And Dawn has been really, really good for a long time. And even by her incredibly high standards that she has already set, I think this is her best coaching job. This is remarkable. And look at how they did it. Tessa Johnson, who you have in our notes here, 19 points off the bench as a freshman. Malaysia Fulwiley coming in and sparking them early in that game when Iowa really threw the first punch and went up 10 to nothing, 20 to 9, and they bring in Fulwiley, and Iowa doesn't have an answer for her. She scores 7 quick points, obviously bringing in Tahina Pau-Pau in the transfer portal, developing all of these players who had been on the bench behind all those starters that they lost last year, whether it's Camilla Cardoso, Raven Johnson, Chloe Kitts, Ashlyn Watkins, Bree Hall. You go down the list. It's crazy what Dawn Staley has done with this team. And sort of feels like we're in an era here where this is a dynasty, and in an era where it's a lot harder to have a dynasty because of the parity. But she's doing it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this championship game, and honestly, this whole season too, revealed kind of the disparity in media coverage as well between like the way that this undefeated team got covered versus a team like Iowa on the other side of the floor, and you know what, how Caitlin Clark has kind of been followed over the last 2 years. And like I saw people kind of like, as much as there were new fans being like really like into it, they're also questioning like, oh, like this. And I saw people say like, this is a quiet 38-0 season. And you kind of stop and you think to yourself, you're like, it kind of was. Like, if you look at the way that they were covered, and you, like you saying that this is Dawn's like one of her best coaching jobs, if not the best coaching job she's done, like that definitely deserves more like hype, more attention, and just more conversation about it. And dynasty is a great way to put it. Like, we talked so much about what the South Carolina team looked like last year when they fell in the tournament, and then seeing what they were able to do this week, like Raven Johnson as well too, I think is like one of the biggest stories. Obviously this was her revenge season, her revenge tour, as she like put it. And if you look at her box score, it doesn't, if you didn't watch the game, it doesn't really look that impressive. However, she played a very, very crucial role in this win for South Carolina. Her defense on Caitlin, like you said, like really one of the best defensive jobs on Caitlin that we've seen, especially in the tournament. And I know there's something else that you want to mention that's like Raven related as well. So what did you think?
Well, yeah. If you put this video up here, we can talk about her defense too. We will in a second, but watch Raven in the top. I don't know if we can like play this a few times. We still haven't figured out this whole thing.
We're bringing back the manual loop.
Yeah, just like old times. Camilo Cardoso here gets the ball on that low left block, and Raven is on the top of your screen there in the corner. Cardoso gets to go one-on-one here. She just gets an and-one because she gets to go one-on-one in the post. The reason why she gets to go one-on-one in the post is because Caitlin Clark cannot go double that far off of Raven Johnson. You remember last year, Caitlin Clark completely waved off Raven Johnson. Yeah. I don't need to be within 20 feet of you, you know? And now look at her. She has to stay home. She's not obviously right up on her, but she can't go double Cardoso. So that and one, that didn't show up in Raven stats. That showed up in Camilla Cardoso stats. But I think that's Raven Johnson's shooting improvement impacting that. And I think we saw that all game with her gravity. So I'm not here for any like Raven Johnson didn't have an offensive impact in this game type of talk, because I think she absolutely
did. Yeah.
Whatever the box score says, I throw that out the window. And she impacted the game offensively just by being able to shoot this year. Defensively, though, like you said, outstanding performance. And Bree Hall picked up those two fouls, and Raven Johnson started denying Caitlin Clark all over the court, frustrated her like crazy. And Caitlin Clark had 18 points in that first quarter, finished with 30. 12 points in the last three quarters. That's Raven Johnson. And I wish I would have had time to look up these numbers that I saw on Twitter about what Caitlin Clark did in terms of her shooting and her scoring with Raven Johnson on her specifically for those possessions in this game. Wasn't very good. Not a lot of points. It was a low field goal percentage. I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but Raven Johnson had her in jail. And that is an unbelievable way to cap off your revenge tour to bring your team a championship.
Absolutely. And the one thing that we've also been talking about is those second halves from South Carolina. That Dawn halftime speech, I don't know what she tells them, but it works every time, because they come out and they close out the game. Like you said, Caitlin had 18 points in the first quarter. She was going absolutely crazy. I was actually at, so I was watching this game at a women's sports bar in downtown Toronto. It's called Peaches. Shout out Peaches. But it's like the first quarter starts. Iowa comes out blazing to like that 20-9 lead or whatever they had. And the entire bar is just like screaming, like cheering, like, I can't believe this happens. And then we're like also cheering for South Carolina to like come back, because I was like, I actually wanted overtime for the game, I won't lie. I was like, I need the chaos. But just
not ready
seeing
for the
what,
season to end, right?
Yeah, I wasn't ready. But I mean, we didn't get it, but it's fine. But like, did we even end up having overtime? Just as an aside to any of these games, I feel like we didn't. Or did I? Am I like not?
Don't remember an overtime off the top of my head from Sweet 16 and on. We had a few in the first weekend, first and second round. I don't think we got one in the second or third weekend. No.
That's tough. We needed some extra chaos.
We did.
But no, it's okay. But just like seeing, you know, like I said, that second half from South Carolina and what Raven was able to do and just make Caitlin's life very hard. And that's just kind of a good way to describe what South Carolina has been like this season and why they've been able to have that undefeated record. That's so important. Like, it's such a cliche to say play all 40 minutes, but it's so true. And that's exactly what the Gamecocks do. On Iowa's side, let's talk about their end of the season. And I wrote it in the notes, the Caitlin Clark of it all. I guess where I want to kind of go with this conversation is just kind of your thoughts on her influence and her stardom this season. And now that she's kind of transitioning to the W, maybe things that like we can improve on when it comes to coverage of these athletes, and having a name like Caitlin Clark be so big and so booming, but kind of the nuance that comes with that as well.
Biggest thing we can improve on is what Paige Becker said the other day when someone asked her about, is she going to take over as the face of college basketball next year now that Caitlin Clark is gone? And she said, no, I hope not, because there's a lot of people that should be there. It's not just me. It's Juju. It's Hannah Hidalgo. It's Angel Reese. Well, not Angel Reese next year, but, you know, all these different players. And that's what we can improve on, is we can get these fans who are new and coming into the game because of Caitlin Clark, which is great. Obviously, we want as many fans as we can get. So welcome. Now let's go watch Juju next year. Let's go watch whoever. Let's go watch in the WNBA. Go watch Caitlin Clark in the WNBA. And also go watch Aaliyah Boston in the WNBA. Go watch the Aces in the WNBA with Asia Wilson and Jackie Young and on down the list. Go watch all of these players that are absolute phenomenal world-class talents. And Caitlin Clark is one of those. And it's really cool that Caitlin Clark has developed this following to get these people who never would have dreamed to watch in women's basketball 5 years ago to, you know, come to our sport. Now let's expand it. That's where I'm at.
For sure. I think I've seen, it's so funny. I've seen like memes of like South Carolina fans, like, you know, that like get along t-shirt where there's like one big t-shirt and then like now they have to root for Caitlin because she's going to get drafted by Indiana and she's going to play with Aaliyah Boston. I just think stuff like that is so funny. I think I totally agree. Some other stuff about Iowa before we kind of move on a little bit. Hannah Stolke. And we've talked about freshman fire this year. I came up with another one, sophomore star for her, because she blossomed in this tournament. I mean, you saw, like, we talk about like Caitlin Clark being made to struggle, but I think that Hannah really kind of came out of her shell when that was happening. I mean, she had a couple of really, really solid performances to kind of cap off this season. I'm curious, like, what your thoughts were on her performances and, like, is she now that next piece for Iowa to kind of build around?
Definitely. She's the best player on Iowa right now. And, she was the second best player this year. But I like sophomore star, by the way, because we're going to have to use that a lot next year with this freshman class. That has been
they're graduating to the next level.
Now they're sophomores. Yeah. We got a whole year to come up with a junior one. We'll think of one. But in terms of Hannah Stolke, I think what she did in this tournament is going to be remembered for a long time. It should be, because it was not Caitlin Clark and a bunch of random people or whatever people want to say. Hannah Stolke stepped up big time in not just that championship game. Honestly, the last three games, going back to LSU, going back to UConn, facing some incredible talent in opposing front courts. And Iowa really, really needed her. I don't think they win the UConn game without her. And then when you look at next year, it's going to be interesting to see, first off, I mean, who knows? Maybe Hannah Stolke transfers somewhere. Maybe she doesn't. If she doesn't, I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that, but I don't have inside info, so whatever. Who cares?
Iowa fans are going to be like, don't manifest it. Don't put it out there.
No, they're going to be all over our comments. Oh, well.
It's okay.
Go ahead. If she stays, though, I would love to see them get some pieces in coming, you know, to surround her to sort of be able to make her be the focal point, but bring in you're not going to bring in another Caitlin Clark, but bring in some guards who can kind of continue to run that pick and roll and kind of hit her in transition. Cause she's so good in transition. So good.
Yeah.
If you're running the floor and beating everyone down the floor, you're only as good as a guard who can get you the ball. And Hannah Stolke can beat defenses down the floor all day. They got to find some guards who can get that pass up to her like Caitlin Clark could. So I hope they do that for Hannah Stolke's sake, because I would love to see her thrive the best possible level. And I think she deserves to be on a team that really builds around her and solidifies her as like the star that she is, the sophomore star that she is.
Yes, I like it. Just a quick shout out to some of the other players as well before we move on to some off-season talk. Kate Martin, just like, I wrote a steady presence amidst it all. I mean, we talked about her rebounding last week. I think like she was also a really good player for Iowa. And then real quick before we move on, I want to talk about Gabby Marshall and also Angel Reese, like to a certain extent with the social media threats. Now, like, Angel didn't delete her social media, but Gabby did, just based on the response that the responses that they were getting and kind of the harassment towards them. And Angel, of course, like she talked about that after LSU's loss in the tournament, just like the racism, the sexualization, like all of these things, the sexism that she's faced. And it was really heartbreaking to like hear her say that. But I think this is something that is a big issue, to be honest, especially because these are college players. Like they're very young, like, and we already see kind of the, especially with like sports betting and all these other things, like we see the messages that professional players get, even in the W2. And like, even if you go on Angel Reese's TikTok, like I went on her TikTok yesterday because she was posting some really funny stuff, and I opened the comments, and the comments are full of horrible, horrible things, super racist. I'm like, I cannot believe this. Like, this is just, it's a lot. It's a lot to like handle. And it's just kind of the part that sucks also with the growth of the game, I feel like. It just like feels like it's amplified even more. And I think like moving forward, I don't know how to solve it, but I really do commend both like Gabby and Angel kind of speaking out about it. Because it does suck, but like there has to be some kind of accountability for people who feel the need to talk to athletes like this, especially as they're like about to become professionals as well.
I wish we had a way for some accountability, because I agree 100%. Like if you are trying to go literally in life, just like harass anyone for any reason, first off, like go get help, go to therapy. Like it's just no reason for that. And especially specifically like athletes who don't know you, you're never going to talk to them. They're 20, 21 years old. Like, get out of here with that. It's just completely, I don't even know what word I can say on this podcast for it, but it wasn't even just those two. Like Hannah Stolke earlier in the season missed a free throw at Ohio State, had to delete her social media, got all sorts of this awful, awful hate. And what are we doing? What are we doing? I hate it. And obviously, like at professional level too, awful. College, it's even worse, because these are just like you said, 20, 21, 22 year olds trying to, they're just trying to hoop. They're just trying to have fun. Like, let them live. So I don't know what the accountability part is, because it's so easy to just get on there with anonymous names or whatever and just say whatever you want to say. But I hope we figure out a way, because I mean, like the sports betting side that you brought up, like if you can find a way to find some people who are saying these nasty things to people and know what their sports betting account is, like ban them from all sports books for life. I don't care. You don't deserve to be doing that.
I really like that as a consequence, actually. I never even thought about that, but I think that's pretty fair considering the things that, you know, I've seen athletes post, like their DMs and stuff. Yeah. And even myself, like I'm not a big athlete. I'm 21 years old. I've had my DMs on Twitter turned off for like the last 4 years because of the messages that I would get. And even if I get like really sexist responses on a tweet, like that ruins my whole day. So like I can't even imagine just like at the volume that these like athletes are getting these types of responses at is like hundreds of times bigger than what somebody like me is getting. And so like us being the same age, I'm like, I really don't know. Like I would have a breakdown. And so I really hope they have a good, you know, support team and like people around them, because that's just a lot. And I like that idea of banning the sports betting accounts of people who are messaging athletes like that, because you wouldn't talk to them like that in person. And if you would, that's even worse, and go to jail. But that's kind of where I stand on all that. And it's just, it feels really bad too. Like even with social media, like as much as they're so good, like there's just so much bad that gets amplified as well. So accountability, that's the word for today. All right, real quick before we do WNBA draft talk, I do want to mention this article by ESPN that was published like I don't know, hours after the championship, a day after the championship. Like, they're already ranking next season's teams. And I find this funny. I think it's like, it's fun to do little exercises like this, I guess, to a certain extent. But at the same time, I'm like, we also saw what rankings, like some rankings didn't mean anything by the time we got to the season. Like, it all depends on the teams. I also think there are so many players in the transfer portal right now. I think it was like reported as like over 1,000 players are in the transfer portal that also said they were in the transfer portal after this article got posted. And going through some of these rankings, of course, South Carolina's first. I think it would be extremely dumb to not have them be first. Texas being second is very interesting to me. Notre Dame after UConn, USC. Did anything kind of stand out to you on this list? I think for me is like Oregon State being ranked 12 is a little bit interesting considering they've had a couple of players declare that they're going in the transfer portal. They're also moving to the WCC next year for all those who have forgotten that the Pac-12 is over. So I think it's a bit of an interesting thing to rank these teams so early. I don't know. This is kind of a whole like spiel, but Cal, you have any thoughts on kind of ranking these top 25 teams this early and any players in the transfer portal right now?
Well, everyone always does this on the men's and women's side, and I, you know, pro sports too, honestly, and they call it the way too early rankings, and it's always been way too early. But now in college sports, in any sport, football too, whatever, when you look at the transfer portal, it's even more way too early. It's like way, 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 way too early because it's even compared to like 5 years ago, you know. And case in point, you asked about who's in the transfer portal and you brought up Oregon State. When this was written, which was only what, 2 days ago, Oregon State was ranked 12th and they had already lost to Leavon Olhoff into the transfer portal because of moving to the WCC, which is a shame. It's not their fault. It's not her fault.
Yeah.
It's just how it goes. Wants to face better competition, she deserved to. So they already lost her, but they hadn't lost Tamia Gardner yet. These rankings were based on Tamia Gardner still coming back. She is not. She has entered the transfer portal now. So obviously you move them down from 12 based on that. Who knows who else will follow those two? And when you look down the list, I'm sure there's some other players on here who...
North Carolina, Deja Kelly is in the transfer portal as well.
Deja Kelly was not in the portal. Exactly, yep. This is based on Deja Kelly coming back, not happening. So, well, actually, I do think I saw reported that Deja Kelly is keeping her options open about coming back. So,
yeah,
who knows? But it's just it's a revolving door, and it's so hard to predict. South Carolina being number one is not hard to predict because
That feels like the only one where you're like, yeah, okay, yeah. That's okay.
You Sinai can say Rivers that. Is about the only one in the last few years that you can really think of going and making a big impact that they lost to the portal. They don't lose players to the portal very often, which is why they're so good. And because everyone wants to play for Dawn, unsurprisingly, Dawn's the GOAT. So South Carolina is going to be number one. After that, who knows? Anything could happen. I do love that, you know, before we move on, that you wrote in our notes here, Illinois at 25. And I think that's great. I love it.
That's the only time it matters.
You look at their last two seasons since Shauna Green took over, and before that they were terrible. The program was like 20 years of doing absolutely nothing, can't even sugarcoat it. Shauna Green came in, immediately got them to the tournament in year one. First four, lost in the first four. This year, make the WBIT, go on and win it. Obviously, you look at their seasons and their record and getting to the tournament or not, it looks like they took a step back. I don't think they were actually that much worse this year than they were last year. I think they, when you look at the outcomes, like last four into the tournament, lose their first game, or one of the first ones out of the tournament and go on a run and win the WBIT. It's not that different. And now you look at what they're getting back. Obviously, she's establishing a good culture there as well because they're getting a lot of these fourth years back coming for their fifth year. Makaira Cook is coming back. Kendall Bostic is coming back. They have a lot of experience and veteran pieces who said, we want to run this back one more time. I think Illinois is getting back to the tournament next year, and I'd like to see them on this list of top 25. I'm glad you snuck that in our notes there.
I had to. All right, so there are some championship thoughts, some portal thoughts, some offseason thoughts. And now let's talk a little bit about the WNBA draft.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, so as we mentioned, the WNBA draft, there's a quick turnaround. It will be on Monday, April 15 at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. I do want to shout out across the timeline for pulling together a bunch of mock drafts from across different W outlets and writers and media members and things like that. Some of them are from a while ago, so they might be a little bit outdated, which is fine. I know a lot of them still have Georgia Amor on them, and she's obviously going to Kentucky instead of declaring for the WNBA draft, which we got to talk about Kentucky at some point as well, I think, because now it's Virginia Tech, Kentucky. But anyway, we'll talk about that on another show. But yeah, do you have any thoughts kind of like on players that have formally declared? Because there are the W release, and this doesn't even include the people that were at the time that were still in the tournament. But we had a formal list of like players that have declared, like Brené Alexander's on there, Mackenzie Forbes, Hannah Jump, Mackenzie Holmes, and like a bunch of all these players. Do you have any thoughts on them? And also one player that we forgot to mention that's in the transfer portal, which is Haley Van Lith out of LSU. A lot there, but any general thoughts on the WNBA draft, players in there, any picks that maybe are a little bit too high?
Yeah, well, I know you have one that you want to talk about.
Yeah.
For me, you know, honestly, I don't know. Like, I just got back from Cleveland, and I'm switching to WNBA draft mode now. So as soon as we get off this podcast, one of my, you know, things I'm looking to do this week is dive into all the film, all of this WNBA stuff, and sort of get up to speed and get in draft mode. But I do want to say one that I'm very interested in is that we already talked about a little bit is Nika Mule, because I see a couple of these mocks have her as high as the first round. And I don't think that she's been viewed as a first rounder for very long. I think going back to coming into this year, I don't think really anyone was talking about her as a first rounder, as far as I heard, at least. But with her performance that we saw the other day, it's possible. Who knows? I'll be interested to see if anyone wants to go with her in the first round. And then got a lot of bigs here. Leah Edwards, Camilla Cardoso, Angel Reese. How do some of these teams view them? And especially with the Dallas Wings having the 5th pick and the 9th pick. And we know that Dallas loves bigs. We know that they have a lot of bigs. Are they going to draft another big? Because maybe that's the best player available. Are they, you know, especially if, for example, Camilla Cardoso falls to them at 5th, she might be the best player available at that point. She is obviously not a positional need. What do they go with? We'll see. I tend to think teams go with the best player available, but that'll be really interesting to see because it's a pretty extreme case, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there's some other ones on here that I think the top three look pretty set, but it's tight. It's coming on Monday, and it's today's Tuesday. It's less than a week. It's such a quick turnaround, like you said.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for it. I'm excited to dive in this week and really get into it.
I'm excited to see Canadian Leah Edwards get drafted in the top 5. We're manifesting that right now. I think a couple of these mock drafts are interesting. Some, like I said, some are from a while ago and could be dated and could be updated, but There's a couple of them that have Alyssa Pealey maybe a little bit higher than I personally would have her, especially because of the players that she's being put over in the draft, especially when we talk about kind of the best player available. I know, like, people are gonna be like, oh, you're so biased because you're Canadian, but I truly think Aaliyah Edwards, like, players like Aaliyah Edwards should be getting drafted over her at this rate, like, at this point in their careers. I think, especially with the international experience as well too, I think she's more than proven herself. There are a couple where, let me just double check this so I'm not speaking out of turn, but yeah, like over like JC Sheldon as well too. I guess like it is going to depend on best player available, and but also fit with the team. I feel like that's so important too. Which players are going to fit? Which players are you going to be able to develop with the veterans that you have, with the coaching staff that you have? Like, what is your direction as a team? Especially now, like you look at a team like the Los Angeles Sparks who have that number four pick, you're kind of like, and they have a second pick too. And I know there's been a lot of debate there too, if Cameron Brink or Rekia Jackson or even Camila Cardoso jumps up high, and maybe they take one of those players over Cameron Brink. Personally, I think Cam stays at two, but it is an interesting topic, and you never know. Things could be decided at the very last second. They could be prepped and ready with the player that they want, and if the vibes are just different on that day and they decide, oh, actually, we want to do this, I'm all for it. I'm all for the chaos, and I'm all for that on draft night. But yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at. Also, the other thing is, like, so many players have declared for the draft, and so many more are going to declare. And it makes me very sad to think that a lot of them are probably not going to be able to retain a spot on rosters. And something that, you know, Kathy's kind of talked about recently is that roster sizes are not really one of their priorities in terms of like making more. Their priority is on expansion. And I think that's the part where maybe somebody who's in business knows it a little bit better than me. I just don't understand why they both can't be a priority, or like why they want to stick to that. You know, most teams stick to that like 11 person roster. Like, I don't understand why increasing roster sizes can't be the same priority as like expansion, because especially, and there was that other quote too about the broadcast deals, and she said something along the lines of like, we're going to at least double it. And everybody's like, if that deal is not like $400 million, then we're going to riot. So like, I just don't understand, like, especially with the numbers that we just got, that 18.7 million viewers for the championship. I just feel like if you don't capitalize on it, then what are we doing? Everything's just going to take so much more time than it needs to. It feels like this is where the resources should be getting put. So I think that's like my biggest thought too. Also, another player that I didn't see on a ton of mock drafts, De'Asia Fair, somebody who we've talked about as well too, who hasn't gotten, and I really apologize for this, fair coverage during the season.
Made it 44 minutes without a pun. You had to get one.
Yeah, I had to get one in. But she also became the third top scorer in Division I's basketball this season, too. That's how she finished the season with Syracuse, and she declared for the draft. So, I don't know. It's just, like, an interesting time where, like, it feels like the talent is just getting bigger, and the development and the spots and the resources needs to catch up and, like, go beyond, because otherwise we're going to get into a situation where – we're not going to have players. We're not going to have players that are going to be able to develop. And I think I was always at, sorry, it's turning into a very long rant, but like, I think I was always at the thought of like, I don't want to like kick older players out, but if it's going to come to this, and I'm looking at you, Diana Taurasi, which I feel like, I feel like Caitlin has like now fueled her even more to stay in the league, which is like a little bit scary to think about. And like all these casuals seeing who DT actually really is as a person. And I don't know. It's an interesting time. I think it's getting a little crowded, and I just hope the W can start to expedite that process of letting the women's basketball scene kind of grow and have the resources available for them. That was a long rant. If you tapped out in the middle of that, I don't blame you, but yeah.
No, can we get more of this? Like every week, can we get more of the, I love it. I do not want you to apologize for this long rant, because this is what I'm here for. Like, spicy Karina Mustafa.
She doesn't come out often.
But she's here today. Let's get more of this. I love it.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot there. I just feel like, and because everybody, especially with these newer fans, like, and some of my friends too, who get are starting to get more into women's basketball the last couple of years, they always ask me, like, so why isn't this happening? And why isn't the WNBA doing this? And why aren't they doing this to, like, help accommodate for whatever, everything that we've just been talking about? And I don't really have an answer for them. Like, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. That's just how it is. Like, that's just how they say things are going. And I mean, we have that one expansion team coming next year, and we'll see what happens after that. I know Toronto just put their bid in, but that wouldn't launch until at least 2026. And so, I don't know. I just look at leagues like the NWSL, who has done such a good job at expanding. Like, it feels like they announced teams in pairs. They announced them really quickly. And I just don't understand why the W can't do that. I guess that's kind of where I'm at, because I'm seeing other women's leagues be able to take that step. We've seen the success of the PWHL, of their launch this year as well, too, in hockey. And they don't have that many teams yet. I think they have like six teams. But I think they have a business formula that seems to be working, and they are adjusting to what the response has been, to what supply and demand, all of that. That's kind of my spiel for the day. Be better. Let's grow. Let's help women's basketball grow.
You are not alone.
Just
say that.
All right, Cal. Anything else before we wrap things up?
I can't top that. That was a great note to end on. I think you nailed it.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for tuning in. Like I said, the WNBA draft is Monday, April 15 at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And I'm sure it will be on TSN for our Canadian viewers as well. Also, I didn't even mention the WNBA announced that they're like have some viewership partnership with something in the UK and Ireland. And so at least there's a global reach there. Support women's sports. Everybody watches women's sports. Everybody watches women's basketball. This has been Coast to Coast on Her Hoop Stats. You can follow us on social media at Her Hoop Stats, myself at Karina MM, Calvin at CWetzel31. Make sure you sub wherever you get podcasts. We're also on YouTube, so make sure to subscribe to Her Hoop Stats on there. And we will catch you next Tuesday.